Hello everyone, I'm back. It's the evening of October 3rd, 2013. It's around 8 o'clock in the evening. I got back from England a little over 2 weeks ago and I've been settling into my usual routines here in Winnipeg. The fall nights have been on the warm side, quite beautiful. The colors of fall are quite wonderful. My time in the UK went very well. We did a 5-day retreat in the British countryside. We did a 2-day seminar in London, all of which went very smoothly. I want to thank Marcus Fellows for organizing the retreat situation, for finding the retreat space, and for hosting me, he and his family, in my time in England. I also want to thank Brett Valance for putting together the London seminar weekend. He found a wonderful place for us to gather. I had a chance to see old friends and to make some new friends. It was a great group of people all around. Had a chance to see some beautiful places, some interesting spots in London, and get into a few situations that I wouldn't get into here in Winnipeg. I was invited back for next year. I was also invited to Ireland for next year. We had an Irish contingent come over. But I've told people that I'm going to pull back from teaching for the next little while. I won't be accepting any invitations to travel to make any presentations. And I've set aside my teaching here in Winnipeg. For the next while. I will continue with the website, so by all means send questions in and I'll respond to them at the end of each month. I've had about 13 or 14 people send in comments and questions in the time that I was away, so we'll get down to that. However, just before we get down to that, I want to remind everyone that if you're having any difficulty relating to my responses, you might consider listening to one of the main talks on the website. If you go to the Listen Dropbox, you'll find two main talks there. One is entitled Overview of Awakening. And the other is titled Acknowledging the Moment. So again, if you're having difficulty relating to what I'm speaking about in these responses and you're interested, you could listen to that overview of awakening. That will give you a much broader and more detailed sense of what it is that I'm offering here. A first person has written in, actually wrote in just before I left for England, and she had this to say: in 2009, I had a pretty cool awakening moment as a result of a very deep suffering. It was incredibly pleasant. In a second, I felt some infinite calm, and my whole body was smiling. Worries and doubts were gone. One interesting thing that happened is that I connected with nature almost at an energetic level. That is, I could feel tingling and tickles when I touched plants and animals. I could feel the flying of a bird as if I was performing it. That lasted for about 3 months, never to come again. I have attended a number of retreats with different teachers. I understand at heart what each teacher repeats, but I don't see any of them getting out of their theories and repetitions once they gain the fame. They continue to be their personalities, just with more clarity about their own interpretation of everything. The thing is, I went through my experience, I continued to unfold progressively, but in losing most of the concepts, I've lost my ability to live normally in this world, like you, for instance. As my approach to life has transformed, mainly by freeing myself of concepts, I haven't continued with my social circles. I decided to live alone 4 years ago, which I enjoy for the most part. I have no interest in writing scholarly articles anymore. It seems a farce to me, but that's my living. I consulted some therapists, but they found me realized and said I was like an Eastern monk living in the West. They and I don't think this is depression. I still go to the movies, do yoga, go biking, go on vacation, etc. But I do this on my own. I don't know what I want or what I'm unfolding into. There is no concept of what happiness is anymore, or love, or truth. I don't feel like I love anything or anyone, as these words are defined anyways, but I feel compassion when the time comes. I have lost all sensitivity to this world, including my mother and daughter. So my emotions have also been transformed. Things come and go. I don't get involved anymore. And for a while, I have had a great share of bad luck with my health and money. I just accept, deal with, and use all of the wisdom that has come to me, manifest through me. I take action when necessary, but just live, you know? I will be 58 soon and feel a coldness toward everything. I don't understand or question the movements of this ever-changing current that manipulates everything, making a puppet out of my life form. I don't like its game at the moment, but don't resist it either. This too shall pass. Any insights along your reading of these lines would be greatly appreciated. No question in particular. So this was an interesting letter, mainly because I wasn't sure what this person was really asking for. On one hand, she's saying that she's not at all concerned about anything that's happening, but some of the expressions, some of the descriptions seem to be a bit radical, and if she wasn't at all concerned, I'm not sure why she would be writing to me in order to ask for my insights around all of this. I actually wrote back to her a short email. As I said, this came in just before I left for England, and I sent her a short note just pointing out that there were a number of contradictions within her statement, which seemed a bit confusing. On the one hand, some of what she was saying sounds, you know, pretty straightforward in relation to a non-dual perspective. With the arising of a non-dual perspective, then it would be the case that, you know, a person would lose certain interest in some of the worldly activities that most people are interested in. However, there was a contradiction in some of her statements here that I wasn't quite clear about. And I didn't really know what I could offer this person, because I wasn't really clear as to what she might be asking. It's always difficult to actually assess what it is that's really being said. We all use words a little differently. But again, as I said, some of these statements are very radical. For instance, she says, in losing most of her concepts, she's lost her ability to live normally in this world. And she points out that she feels that I still live normally in the world. And she says that as her approach to life has transformed mainly by freeing herself of concepts, she hasn't continued with her social circles. Now, I mean, these statements, these are very radical, and I'm not sure exactly what she's meaning here, because she says she's lost most of her concepts and she's freed herself of concepts. Now, I don't know of anybody with a non-dual perspective that's freed themselves totally of concepts or lost their concepts. You can lose your belief in what we call concepts, You can even come to see that the world of concepts is really ultimately a totally mysterious happening, ultimately. But you're not going to lose your concepts or get rid of your concepts. And the mere fact that she's still going to movies and going on vacation and has consulted therapists means she's still using concepts. And actually, this entire writing is very much focused on the world of concepts. And in general, even though she's saying that she's reached this point where she's really not concerned about anything, most of what she's expressing here seems to be a bit of concern that she's not living normally in the world. You know, she said she's gone to therapists to check this out. They say she's not depressed, that she's actually a realized being. However, she's pointing out in great detail with the world of concepts all of these things that she seems to have lost. She feels coldness towards everything. However, compassion still arises when appropriate. She's lost all interest in her mother and her daughter, but she still has an interest in movies, in yoga, in biking, in vacations. She enjoys living on her own, but feels a coldness towards everything. Again, there's a contradiction here. I don't really understand what's being said. She's saying that she doesn't understand life, but then in the next moment she says she's talking about life being a current that's manipulating everything, making a puppet out of her life form. That's a very strong focus on a very particular concept, which actually isn't a non-dual concept. From a classic sense of non-duality, it wouldn't be a situation that something was manipulating and making a puppet out of her life form. It would be more that there is simply the ever-shifting current of life, that ultimately the apparent forms aren't really anything apart from the moving, shifting, dancing event of life. Anyway, I wrote back a note to her. I'll read that. I wrote back saying, "Thanks for your email. I'm not sure what I can offer you, but briefly, it's common for someone with a non-dual perspective to lose interest in many of the things the average person is interested in. In my own case, there isn't a lot that I relate to, but there are still some things that I enjoy. You say life is losing all meaning, but it sounds as though you want a conceptual meaning, and it has no conceptual meaning. It never had any true conceptual meaning, yet there are things you still enjoy. You say that in the letter, and you still have compassion for others. The Buddha left society, Christ left society, Ramana Maharshi left society. They still lived in a society of some sort, without relating to the usual society. There seems to be some contradiction in your statements, one moment saying you enjoy living on your own, and in the next saying you feel a coldness towards everything. If you feel a coldness towards everything, why do you go biking, go to the movies, go traveling, etc.? Also, non-duality doesn't free anyone from their apparent personality. It just lets you see it's an indefinable happening. You might check out my website for the monthly response titled The Non-Duality Scam, and the one titled A Great Confusion. I'll comment more in the next monthly response." So she then wrote back saying, "Dear Daryl, thank you for your answer to my message, both for caring enough to make the time to write to me, and especially for the wisdom and accuracy of your words. As you recommended, I listened to your August talk, and the answer you provide in the first segment of the second part totally resonates with my original inquiry to you. The person you were responding to is going through a very similar experience, and your answer to her was custom made for me. What I found right on target in your answer to my email are two things. First, I have indeed been searching for a conceptual meaning to all of this, as you said, but I wasn't aware that search was a factor keeping me from letting it all go, letting it all be, until you clearly mentioned it. In fact, I now realize there is something in there wanting to take charge. It feels like it could be an existential fear. It's like the identity is making it my perspective. The existing of me as a woman having a separate life seems to be the lead. She is also an appearance, though, but this has not been letting me see her as part of the whole. I yet need to dissolve whatever belief is there that I exist at all. The second thing is, yes, indeed, there seems to be a contradiction when I say I enjoy life alone, but I am feeling a coldness towards everything. You are again precise. What I meant in this, and I would beg again your insight on this matter, is that even if I do enjoy things like walking, cooking, travel, movies, etc., they come about unexpectedly and basically with no passion or desire, as it used to be when I used to crave and want things before my awakening. Of course, all that has been transformed, and I realize things will never present themselves again under these egotistic aims. But even when hugging someone, there is just these arms embracing the other without much feeling or love or bliss, for these concepts have lost their original meaning. Sexual desire has also changed, for I used to invest imagination and mental effort into it, but all of that just isn't there anymore. There's no complaint here, it's all fine, but I am continuously noticing these changes, which I've called coldness, to name the current lack of passion. Things are just unfolding or developing in this way. I don't know what other changes may come. I sit a lot, not wondering. It seems to me identity might still be running at some point, for when I write the above paragraph, I think, if there's no ownership of a feeling, is there something missing? I just continue to live, but not eluding the negative connotation this might evoke, instead just being life itself, you know, just as it shows up. Thank you for your pointers. They've made a huge difference, not only in my understanding, but in my unfolding. Okay, so in this letter, it sounds a little less radical, some of the statements. She's simply saying there is falling away of certain passions that she's had, that certain words have lost their meaning. She no longer is relating to certain emotional states through those conceptual meanings as much. And she's saying she's still somewhat searching for some conceptual meaning to all of this. And she's wondering if, she says it feels like there might be a certain deep level of fear that's really not allowing her to simply feel comfortable with the whole thing unfolding as a totally mysterious happening. Again, the arising of a non-dual perspective is unique in every case, and if there is a radical sense or a deep sense of this totally mysterious event of existence, it can in some cases throw into disarray a lot of the usual thoughts that we have about existence. And if there has been a deep acknowledgement of the totally unexplainable happening of existence, the totally unexplainable happening of this moment, it removes the underpinnings to the usual ways that we've looked at life, the usual ways that we've apparently related to life, and for a period of time there can be a certain amount of confusion. Again, this isn't necessarily the way every non-dual perspective arises, but in some cases it does arise in this fashion or a similar fashion. if it's acknowledged that all of life is simply presenting itself, then on some deep level, we are not going to be pursuing a certain direction in life very strongly. We're not going to be left with the feeling that ultimately we're in charge. And even if we do feel inclined to move towards something in particular, to have this radical sense that life will present itself in whatever way it presents itself, then we're no longer depending on life going a certain direction. Usually when we think we're in charge of the whole thing, we're expecting it to go in the direction that we want it to go. So we invest those directions and those efforts. We invest that with a lot of energy and hope. If we have this acknowledgement of the larger mysterious dance of existence, we know that we may be inclined to move in a certain direction, but there are no guarantees as to whether or not life is going to proceed in the way that we're hoping it to proceed, and we very definitely don't have the hope that whatever we're getting in any particular moment is going to satisfy us for the rest of our lives. So there's a certain energy, a certain focus that falls away, and there comes a more relaxed relationship to existence and what it's going to present, because we know that what it's going to present will be a mixture of ups and downs, joys and sorrows, clarities and confusions, and there's no way around that. It's also the case that if we really see that all of our stories about life are not ultimately true, if we acknowledge the fact that we don't really have any explanation for ourselves, that all of our descriptions of ourselves are not literally what we are, that we too are simply a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening in whatever way it happens, then a lot of our usual personal storyline loses importance, and a lot of the expressions of life, a lot of the joys of life will in some way lose a certain intensity, because again, they're no longer being invested with this personal story. It's not all about me, and my connection with another person is not a connection of two special people, two special life histories that come to connect, so that you may be caring for somebody, but it's unlikely that it's going to end up being the feeling of two self-absorbed egos connecting with each other. It's going to be more the totally mysterious event of life, and the fact that even though what we usually call caring and love aren't truly something that we can understand, it still presents basically what we would call caring and love. And sometimes the basic experience of that can actually take on a deeper richness, because it's really the acknowledgement of the actual happening of that, and not so much a focus on the mental interpretation of that, the personalizing of all of that. So in some ways it might lose a certain intensity or personal desperation, but on the other hand, it may carry with it a richer sense of a warmth in that caring for others, or the arising of compassion. It's also the case that there can be a deep acknowledgement of the great unexplainable, unformed happening of existence, and a deep feeling that we do not exist as anything apart from all of that. And yet, on some level, you know, even though we've acknowledged the fact that all of that is totally unexplainable, there can still be somewhat of an attachment to the world of thought. And so there can be an attempt to hang on to the world of thought, but in relationship to acknowledging that larger event, when the focus is still attempting to cling to thought to some degree, it might end up describing only negative things, like I'm losing this and I'm losing that, and I'm totally free of thought, but I'm feeling totally cold to everything. I'm, you know, on the one hand, there's the feeling that we may be free of thought, but on the other hand, there's still this desperate clinging to thought to try to explain everything that's going on. And we might end up playing some kind of little game in there, on the one hand, feeling that we've given up the world of thought, but then on the other hand, still attaching to it. It's also the case that with this world of thought, when we first acknowledge that none of it is ultimately true, sometimes there's a strange thing that happens where we begin to deny the world of thought. Or, you know, if we have been living with the feeling that there is a me that's existing, and we realize the falseness of that story, then we automatically assume another story that says, I need to get rid of any belief that there's a me existing at all, or that we might even say that existence is a totally ridiculous notion. And we could maybe be careful about that, because we're really not attempting to get rid of any of these ideas. We're simply realizing that whether these ideas present themselves or not, they are not describing existence, ultimately. So it's not a matter of ending up with a different set of ideas. It's ultimately seeing through the belief in the idea that we can actually describe life, so that all sorts of ideas can still arise, all sorts of ideas present themselves, but ultimately those ideas presenting themselves are really simply a totally mysterious event taking place on their own. And it's not a matter of having to deny existence. It's simply, in fact, I mean, you can't really deny existence, because even if you drop all of your thoughts, it still basically feels like something's happening in this moment. So it's not a matter of trying to get rid of the feeling that something's happening in this moment, or come up with some idea, some strange idea that there's no existence whatsoever. It's just a matter of acknowledging the happening of this moment and realizing that you can't really say anything true about it at all. And ultimately, from this non-dual perspective, this happening is a totally mysterious happening, happening spontaneously, happening automatically, simply presenting itself. And in that presentation, there are apparent thoughts coming and going. There are apparent emotions coming and going. Even though we can't say what that actually is, the apparent concepts still present themselves, and they still are related to certain apparent forms. All of that is the natural expression of this greater mysterious event. So with this radical acknowledgement of the greater unexplainable happening of this moment, a lot of the usual views of existence, the usual pursuits in existence, all of those fall away. But there are still going to be certain basic interests, certain apparent interests that present themselves, and there will still be a certain caring for those around us. Although, once again, in each case, in each apparent case, it is unique, it is different. Ultimately, from this non-dual perspective, it is the acknowledgement that all of this is unexplainable. All of this is simply presenting itself. We do not exist as anything apart from the presentation, and it simply will play out in whatever way it plays out. But again, thought can be tricky, so sometimes it can seem as though we've given up attachment to thought, but actually, instead, we're still focusing on that world of thought, and instead of acknowledging that none of the descriptions of existence apply, we can fall into a kind of negative description of existence. And I'll give you an example of that. Initially, in some situations, there can be an acknowledgement of this greater mysterious happening of this moment, that it's not a personal little me making any of it happen. And in that realization, often people will end up focusing on the notion that I have no control. We have no control. No one has any control. And they think that that is the non-dual perspective, but that isn't the non-dual perspective. The non-dual perspective is that there is only the dance of this greater unexplainable happening. It's not a situation of a me that has no control. It's an acknowledgement of this totally unexplainable happening, simply spontaneously expressing itself in all kinds of wild and exotic ways. So there can be certain apparent people who feel that they've lost the focus on thought, that they've come to realize a true non-dual perspective, but they simply go around focusing on the world of thought and saying things like, I have no control, which is just a kind of negative use of thought instead of this bottom line acknowledgement that there isn't any way of saying anything true about the happening of this moment, that none of the descriptions apply. Anyway, that's pretty much all that this particular letter has brought up. So we'll move on to the next. Yes, another person has written in saying, I am resonating with all of your writings, books, and other articles very much. Your main pointing always is that existence is a totally mysterious happening, automatically presenting itself. Personally, there is no knowing, no doing, and so on. Even so, when I look backwards in my life, I nevertheless have the strong feeling that there is or must be a kind of determination, or call it fate, destiny. Many examples I could give you, but you can imagine what I mean. My question is, any form of determination excludes spontaneous happening on its own without any direction. Am I right or not? What's your view to that difference to which my mind always capitulates? Okay, does any form of determination exclude spontaneous happening on its own without any direction? Yes, in a way it does, but in another way it doesn't. So, if we acknowledge the totally spontaneous happening of this moment, the fact that it is a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening on its own, and it moves and shifts and dances in whatever way it moves and shifts and dances, And that ultimately everything we are is simply its expression. It's also the case that in that acknowledgement, even if we acknowledge the totally unformed, unexplainable happening of the moment, there is still a world of apparent form. No one's going to get rid of the world of apparent form. And even if we acknowledge that those forms are not truly formed, that even if we acknowledge that each and every thing that we know of is changing in some way so that it has no actual form, the world of apparent form still presents itself. And so, because it's not two different situations, the world of apparent form isn't something separate from the totally spontaneous dance of existence. So, I mean, it's the same happening. So in a way, all those apparent forms are moving to the nature of the totally unexplainable, spontaneous happening that life is. So in a way, we could say that the journey of those forms is determined by the larger dance of existence. So it's a world of apparent form is determined by the unformed dance of existence. And that's why it is that some people will end up using words like destiny or fate. However, if we really examine this in great detail, we discover that that's not quite what's happening here, because it's a world of apparent form. The feeling is that ultimately, since everyone has the feeling ultimately that everything in life is changing, I mean, any of us who have lived life to any degree will eventually say that everything is changing. And scientists will ultimately tell us that everything is changing. And in the world of quantum physics, they'll say that that changing occurs to the degree that actually there are no things, there is only process. So within the world of quantum physics, which is considered to be the essence of existence, it doesn't matter if it appears to be a bunch of things. Ultimately, in quantum physics, they're relating to life as being one great undivided field of energy moving and shifting and dancing on its own. So even though there is the appearance of form, that appearance is considered to be a false appearance. So even though within that world of apparent form, it seems very straightforward to say that the movement of all of that apparent form is determined by the nature of the totally mysterious dance of existence, that's not really what's happening here. That in fact, there is only a totally unformed, unexplainable, spontaneous happening simply presenting itself. So from that sense of things, all of life is just a totally free and wild expression, the dance of something that can never be explained. Now, I had sent a short note to this person. Again, this came in just before I was leaving for England. I sent a short note to this person, kind of pointing out what I just explained. And he wrote back saying, I'd like to state more precisely or expand my question by the following. I mean by determination or destiny that I believe to see almost a pattern since the age of 15 in my experiences and or wrong decisions, especially. Sometimes it seems so that things have developed as a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. It's clear to see that I never was a so-called optimist. How does that fit with your view of things going on in form and formlessness? So he says he believes that he sees a basic pattern from the age of 15. And, I mean, that's what the world of form is. It's the acknowledgement of patterns. So there is the appearance of certain patterns. They can be very concrete patterns, like a building in relation to another fairly concrete pattern, like a car. Or they can be less concrete patterns, like the movement of emotion or the fleeting passage of a thought. And it can also be patterns of a life journey. We can identify something that we would call a life journey or particular experiences. So, yes, there you see all kinds of patterns in existence, or all kinds of patterns seem to present themselves. But ultimately, all of these patterns are the expression of a flowing, shifting, dancing event that has no particular pattern. Even if it seems to be presenting an apparent you at this moment, in a little while, there won't be an apparent you. You know, if we look at what we call ourselves, or how we see ourselves as something existing, but that particular thing has never really had a particular form. It was an eighth of an inch long in our mother's womb, and then it was a foot long, and then it was outside our mother's womb, and then it grew larger, and now it's at the size it apparently is. But it's not standing still, or it's not remaining stable. It's moving and shifting. And at some point, this apparent pattern that we call me will fade away to dust, and existence will go on to present itself in all sorts of other ways. If we focus on those apparent patterns, then we come up with stories about a particular person who's had a lifetime of making bad decisions because he or she could never really be very optimistic about existence. And we can focus on those stories and believe that that's what is actually happening here. Or maybe we can come to see that all of this is a totally unexplainable happening that doesn't have any particular pattern ultimately, or a totally unexplainable happening that presents itself as an apparent parade of ever-shifting events. Right now, the apparent patterns of human beings living on the planet Earth seem to be very important. But at some point, there won't be a planet Earth, and there won't be patterns called human beings, because those aren't the form of existence ultimately either. They're just passing appearances of something that has no particular form. Again, this is just from a non-dual perspective, and either you relate to this sense, a sensibility, or you don't. From this non-dual perspective, it's really a questioning of our usual interpretation of existence. We usually run around interpreting existence as the birth and death of all kinds of different things. Different objects, different people, different experiences, different situations, thinking that those storylines are somehow going to give us some understanding of existence. But the whole focus on the world of form can't really give us an understanding of existence, because all of those forms are disappearing eventually. Existence doesn't have any particular form. It appears in any number of ways in any particular moment. and whatever it seems to be in any particular moment is moving on to some other appearance. Even though that may be acknowledged, the world of apparent form still presents itself. So from this non-dual perspective, there is a bottom line acknowledgement that all of this has no particular form, it can't be explained in any particular way, and yet, even with that acknowledgement, there is the world of apparent form, there is the world of apparent storylines presenting themselves all on their own. Even if we don't want them, they still present themselves and play out in whatever way they play out. And that's all that this particular question is bringing up. Another person has written in saying, "Hello, Daryl. It seems that lately there have been many questions asking you to compare some of the points you are making with points other people are making, wherein all of the points are offered under the heading of a non-dual sensibility. I believe I have heard you say that when you first began presenting what you're presenting, you did not call it a non-dual sensibility. I'm wondering if you've ever considered going back to not referring to it as a non-dual sensibility. It seems possible that if you stop calling it a non-dual sensibility, even if only temporarily, it might lead to an even more open investigation. I realize that this is really none of my business, and I hope no offense is being taken at my suggestion. If you find yourself looking for another term, I would like to suggest some possibilities. Blixianity, Flutaism, or possibly Wazolita." In rereading this email, I'm not sure that I actually intend it as a question to be responded to in your monthly offerings, or just as a lighthearted communication between friends who have never actually met. Yes, I've considered dropping the term non-duality, and I've debated whether or not there would be anything to gain from that. And my feeling right at the moment is, even if I drop that term, whatever I called it, it would still be open to all kinds of misinterpretation. It does get a little bit frustrating that the non-dual community is already steeped in all kinds of preconceived notions about non-duality. You know, ideas like we're all something called awareness, when actually in the really traditional expressions of non-duality, it was pointed out that even words like awareness or consciousness don't apply to what's happening here. And yet you have individuals like Nisargadatta Maharaj, who most of his life he felt that he was something, he was somehow something called consciousness, and it wasn't until close to the end of his life that he realized that this was just a misguided notion about existence. It was a misconception about existence. And he then began expressing that there isn't any way of saying what any of this is. However, I can point that out even under this blanket term of non-duality. So right at the moment, there doesn't seem to be anything to be gained by dropping that general term. Alright, another person has written in saying, "Hey Daryl, I hope you are well. There is looking at the body, sensations, thoughts. The brain works in a magnificent way, as does the heart, the lungs, the circulatory system. If I am really honest, I have to admit that this functioning is simply happening. It points to the fact that I cannot be doing it, it's just happening. So I can't be the body, nor the thoughts and desires, as they are also seen. So that which sees, that which is so quiet, yet everything exists within it, the body, the mind, the world, this seeing has no attribute or substance whatsoever. Is this the infamous nothing or no thing? Yet the deep abiding feeling is that I am looking at the nothing. I. So what's left? At present, even though the above is known on an intellectual level, there is still this sense of I. The I that wants, the I that is sad, happy, etc. What is there to be done? The see, that which is so quiet, yet everything exists within it, the body, the mind, the world, this seeing has no attribute or substance whatsoever. Is this the infamous nothing or no thing? I don't really know what the infamous nothing or no thing is. From my sense, everything that you see around you is no particular thing. It has no particular form. Whatever it seems to be now is on its way to some other appearance. So everything you apparently see outside of you, everything you apparently see inside of you, is a happening that has no particular form. Whatever it seems to be is on its way to some other appearance. So it is no particular thing. And that's all there is. There isn't anything seeing that. As the Ashtavakra Gita stated so long ago, the seer, the seeing, and everything seen, these do not exist. So I think actually they said the knower, the knowing, and everything known, these do not exist. You are the reality in which they appear to exist. So it would apply also to seeing. The seer, the seeing, and everything seen, these do not exist. You are the reality in which they appear to exist. If we examine our experience, we don't have any experience of something that is doing the seeing. So you know, I've pointed this out many, many times. Douglas Harding has this experiment where if you take a paper bag and you cut the bottom out of it and the bag is big enough to go over your face, so you put one end of it over your face and you look out the other end of the bag, you can see all the apparent things out the end of the bag, and you bring the attention back to the bag, and then you bring it back along the inside of the bag as far as you can, it will become very obvious that you have what you call this happening that we call seeing, but there isn't any experience of something at this end doing the seeing. So basically there's just the experience of what we would call seeing. So seeing is this happening, this big happening. And if for whatever reason the focus goes on one little portion of that happening, so within the big happening that we call seeing, the focus goes on a little portion of that, maybe a little form that we might call a lamp, that gets called an object of seeing, but it's the same happening. It's not two happenings. If the total happening is acknowledged, that's called seeing, and if one small portion of that happening is focused on, that gets called an object of seeing, but it's not two happenings. It's just one happening. It's the same happening. It's just somehow the world of concepts is playing this weird game with it. So from this non-dual perspective, there isn't anybody doing the seeing. There's no seer. And there's, you know, what we call seeing is this, just this event, and actually we can examine the word seeing and we realize it's just a sound that's been attached to this big event that we call seeing. So even if we drop that word, there's just this event. And it's not anything we can know as seeing. Seeing is just a totally meaningless sound. It just gets attached to this event, and it takes on meaning when it gets attached to this event. So basically, from this non-dual perspective, we have this happening. It's not a seer, it's not a seeing, and it's not something separate called an object of seeing. It's just this one happening, this undivided happening, and there are a number of different ways of looking at it. But it doesn't change the fact that it's all simply the same happening. And this happening that we call seeing is simply one portion of a larger happening that we call the happening of this moment. You know, normally we're dividing it up into seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. But if we drop all of those ideas, there is just the impression of the big happening of the moment. And none of those labels can actually tell us what it is. If we ask a newborn baby, a baby that's 1 hour old, what is this big happening? The baby has no label for it. The baby has no storyline. And those of us that have a storyline have just been taught to bark certain sounds that ultimately have no particular meaning. So in this exploration, what comes to be acknowledged is a totally unformed, moving, shifting, dancing event that we call the happening of this moment. It's not a knower, it's not a knowing, it's not something known. It's a happening that can't be described in any way whatsoever, in any true way. This happening has no particular form, so it is no particular thing. This happening is what various traditions have labeled in various ways. The Buddhist traditions call it Buddha mind or Buddha nature. The Tao calls it the way. The Buddha ultimately called it the asankata, the unformed. Advaita calls it the unformed ocean of existence. Christianity calls it the Great Spirit. A lot of the indigenous cultures call it the Great Spirit. They call it God. They call it any number of things. This person, towards the end of his note, says, at present, even though the above is known on an intellectual level, there is still this sense of I, the I that wants, the I that is sad, happy, etc. So the word I is just a pointer. For some people, it seems to be pointing to an invisible self that lives inside the body. In my own case, the word I is just a pointing back towards the apparent body, but all that's actually existing is a totally unexplainable happening that has no particular form. We're not going to get rid of the word I. And as far as your sense of what it's pointing to, within a non-dual expression, we're being asked to examine our life to find out what we actually have an experience of and what we don't. So this person says, what is there to be done in this situation? You're simply being asked to explore your life situation, the happening of this moment, to explore your experience of a lifetime. And if you're interested in that and you're asking me, you could read my two books, Dismantling the Fantasy and Essence Revisited. You could listen to the two main talks on this website, and you can listen to some of the responses that I'm offering in relation to these questions that have been written in, have been sent in. And through that exploration, you can find out what your sense of existence actually is. It may or may not relate to what I'm presenting here. Again, I'm always pointing out that a non-dual sensibility is not the one and only true way of looking at existence. It's not even the one and only way of looking at existence. It's just one of life's mysterious expressions. Either you relate to it or you don't relate to it. And it's also the case that if you can take 100 different people that agree with the general non-dual sensibility that all of life is a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening, we don't exist as anything apart from the happening. You can take 100 people who can agree with that, and each one will have a different way of expressing it and will have a slightly different sense of that, even though there is this general agreement. So again, you either relate to this perspective or you don't. Either way is fine. A fifth person has written in saying, "Hello, Daryl. I hope your summer is going well. We're slowly getting our ducks in a row here on the West Coast. Hard to believe the summer is done. Da 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 da. I've been listening to various recordings on your website, just clicking on whichever one in the moment. I have a couple of thoughts. I imagine at one point in humankind's journey, we all have the sense of the oneness of the universe, but as we develop language, we name that oneness God, the universe, consciousness, or whatever, and I think when we named it, we separated ourselves from it, and then we got distracted, forgetting we were part of all of that in the first place. So now some of us get to spend our whole lives getting back to square oneness. Any thoughts? Secondly, when I was young, we had a family crisis, and everyone was very emotional except for me. I watched what was happening without having any upheaval about it. I later thought there must be something wrong with me for being detached from it all, but looking back at that, I think I was just in awareness mode. Do you think there are people out there who are feeling detached, who are actually in awareness or witness mode, but don't even know it? Thanks for your response." So he's asking my thoughts on this notion that at some point we all had the sense, at some point in the history of humankind, we all had the sense of the oneness of the universe. But as we developed language, we named the oneness, and in naming it, we somehow felt separate from it. And we basically forgot that we're part of it. So now some of us get to spend our whole lives getting back to square oneness. So he's wondering what my thoughts are on that particular perspective. And it's a perspective that's used a great deal within non-dual presentations. But like all perspectives, from a non-dual sensibility, it really doesn't apply to what's actually going on here. What the non-dual acknowledgement is that the happening of this moment is a totally unexplainable happening. It can't be described in terms of form, and the labels that we have ultimately mean nothing. So the storylines about forms and their changing ultimately are not what's happening here. They're not a true description of what's happening here. What's happening here has no particular form. And the labels that we have, the various labels, apparent labels that we have for this happening, are ultimately meaningless. They seem to take on meaning when they point to apparent forms. But again, all of this is a totally mysterious happening. It can't be described even in terms of a bunch of labels being attached to a bunch of forms. So from this non-dual perspective, It's a simple acknowledgement that for a newborn baby, for an apparent newborn baby, life doesn't have any particular story at all. It doesn't have any explanation. And within the stories that we all have, the stories themselves will ultimately point out that descriptions of form, of life having a particular form, are ultimately meaningless because life doesn't have a particular form. Everything is changing. And the storylines will also point out that the words that we use have no ultimate meaning. They're just sounds. So whatever this apparent storyline is, it's saying that it's not valid ultimately. And that doesn't leave us with another storyline. It's just pointing out that all the storylines can't really be a true description. In a way, the fantasies themselves point out that they can't be truth. But that doesn't leave us with a truth. It doesn't leave us with a description that can ultimately be the truth. It's simply the acknowledgement that our descriptions themselves, our descriptions of existence, will ultimately deny themselves. And so what remains is just the happening of this moment, what we might call the happening of this moment. Even if we don't call it anything at all, there is the feeling that something is happening here. And there's just the total inability to say anything true about it, to say anything ultimately about it. Now, to acknowledge that doesn't get rid of the world of apparent form, and it doesn't get rid of the apparent storylines that are coming and going. And within that world of apparent form and storylines, it can also be acknowledged that some storylines seem to be more functional, or seem to help us to function more than others. Also, this person is wondering if there are certain people who are just born in awareness mode. And yes, within the world of apparent form, there are certain apparent people who seem to be just very observant in their life. They very naturally step back to observe the movement of life. And I'm quite sure that some of those people feel that maybe there's something wrong with them, but it's just the case that life is expressing them very naturally in this observant mode, what seems to be this observant mode. Again, this is all just within the story of apparent form and or the world of apparent form and the storylines involved with that. Again, from this non-dual perspective, those storylines aren't really describing what's going on here. I think I'm going to end this response at this point and make it two parts. There are enough questions remaining that I will almost get them done probably in an hour and a half or an hour and 40 minutes, but I won't quite get them done. So I'll end this portion of this response here, and if you're interested, you can click on part two when you're ready to do so.